Hello, this is the Dear Deirdre podcast with me, Sally Land, the Sun's resident agony aunt. Yes, we're taking the Sun's legendary advice column from the page to podcast. Every episode, I'll be giving my advice on your real life dilemmas. We'll be covering everything from sex and relationships to money and careers to managing your mental health and much, much more. And I won't be doing it alone, as each week I'll be joined by special expert guests and some of your favourite celebs too. So, if you're struggling with a problem and feel like you need some advice, the Dear Deirdre team is here to help. You can send your problems to Dear Deirdre at the-sun.co.uk. We answer every single letter sent to us, and there's no problem too big, too small, or too embarrassing. But for now, it's on with the show. This week, we're taking a look at your parenting dilemmas, where we'll be addressing your letters on protecting your children against bullies, managing the stress from looking after two kids under three, and consider how to navigate spending time with your children after a nasty relationship split. On this episode, I'm joined by two wonderful guests, parenting expert and founder of Teen Tips, Alicia Drummond, and former JLS singer and TV personality, Aston Merigold. They're both with me now, ready and poised to pass on their expert advice and life wisdom. So, what are we waiting for? Hi, Aston and Alicia. Thank you so much for joining me. For anyone out there who has somehow managed to miss both of you, it would be great to hear a little bit about what you've been working on recently.
Absolutely. Well, really, since the beginning of lockdown, you know, before that, I used to go into schools and do talks for parents and staff and pupils, anything really to do with mental health and wellbeing. And of course, that all came to a grinding halt. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to create something that I've always wanted to do, which was to create a hub for parents so you could go in and find an answer without kind of Googling the Wild West to find the answers to all the questions that we're all going to have along the way from whatever stage your children are at. So it's been a massive, massive project, and we've now gone from one for parents to one for staff to one for the pupils as well. It's been a really exciting journey.
Well, that's amazing. It sounds like it's really taking off then, if there's demand for different platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Aston, how about yourself? What have you been working on?
A multiple of things, to be honest. Brand new music that's just come out now, so I've been kind of locked away and writing new stuff, so that's nice to see the light of day. And then I'm currently on tour as well with the theatre show Footloose. So it's a lot of travelling and a lot of work at the minute, which is great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But it's I imagine, you know, therein lies the juggle with being a dad of young children, lots of travel, and as you say, being locked away for long hours, working hard.
Exactly. It's burning the candle at both ends for sure. But I mean, my kids are unbelievably great. They're so young, but they get it and they understand. So it's, you know, they're excited when they come to visit for a couple of days and they come home. And it's, you know, of course, it's a sad occasion, but they know that it's not for long. And then just being in the studio, they go to bed and they're like, Daddy, where are you going? I said, I'm going to work, I'll see you in the morning. And then it's a bit like, you know, grab them a couple of hours sleep whenever I do finish, and then we're up again for breakfast. So it's not much sleep, but we do what we can.
Yeah, you're still young, it's fine.
Yeah,
you can push on through. Excellent. Well, I wanted to start off on the topic of parenting, asking both of you if there's anything that springs to mind with the worst parenting advice that you've ever been given or heard. And to give you a little bit of thinking time, I'd probably offer up one myself, which was just let the baby scream. It doesn't matter. Let it scream. It is exercising and strengthening its lungs. You don't need to keep picking up the baby. I don't know about you, but everybody, you know, likes to add in their two pennyworth, don't they, when you have kids. So how about you, Alicia? Is there anything that comes to mind for you?
I think it is those early days when everybody's, like you say, kind of, or everybody just wants to try and help. But actually, and I think it was somebody said, you know, you want to get them into a really strict routine. So exactly the same when they're screaming, you know, it's just they're building up an appetite. And you actually know this is just not. This just doesn't feel right. This is definitely one I'm going to ignore.
Yeah, it's that instinct, isn't it? When you just said feel right, that's what you learn to
tap into more and more.
Yeah.
Aston, how about you? Is there anything that you can think of?
Do you know what? The thing that really springs to mind for me, and I just don't say it to any of my friends that are about to have kids and their new parents, is we were always told beforehand, oh, get as much sleep as you can now before. And when we had our, before we had our first, we were so rested that it almost backfired on us completely because it was a bit like we really enjoyed sleep at one point. And then it just, it totally turns from kind of going, oh, we've just had this lovely few months of just really like going to bed at this time. And then it gets so broken that I almost felt like, well, I should have just stayed exactly how I was and just kind of going to bed at whatever time and just kind of did it naturally instead of really trying to force everything and almost be over prepared for something I have no idea about.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you can't see, but I can see Aston's, he keeps looking wistfully up into the top corner like thinking of this sleep.
I think we should really prepare people. Yeah, we should do sleep deprivation training, really, shouldn't we, rather than banking it, because otherwise it's such a shock to your system. And I was thinking, oh, you know, people talk about, oh, when they get them into routine, do this, do that, you're never going to get any sleep. And actually, they don't come with a handbook, and if they did, they hadn't read it. So you just have to go with what happens in the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. If there's a single piece of advice you could give to help anybody who's going through that whole parenting guilt, what advice would it be? I think mine would definitely be find your tribe. So, you know, when you start going to all these mums groups and school and nursery, etc., there are definitely different types of people, and there's mums who worry about certain things and there's mums who are a lot more relaxed. And when you find your gang, it really helps you relax into it rather than feeling that you're being judged or that you're doing the wrong thing. So, yeah, my piece of advice would be find your tribe.
I think just don't give yourself a hard time. There is no such thing as the perfect parent, and actually no child would want a perfect parent. It'd be a nightmare to live up to. So just, you know, we all do the best that we can with the tools and the information that we've got. So if you can find a bit of extra information and find some extra tools, great. But I think if you always fall back on unconditional love connection, you really won't go that far wrong.
And Aston, how about yourself?
Yeah, do you know what? It doesn't stray too far from that. I think mine is just, as long as you've got love in the room, you're fine. I think I've noticed with my boys, it's a bit like, at first, I definitely was, I say I, both of us were those parents of, oh, we need to get this, and I'm sure they would love this, and do it. These boys will be so happy to play with a massive bowl, some water, and a cup. You can make a game out of anything. You can make, like, they don't need or want for anything. Just as much attention as I can physically give them, they appreciate that more than anything. It's a bit like they just want to be kids and they want to play, and they don't want to be told no all the time. Of course we don't, but you know, it's just having that kind of love and safe haven. Do you know what I mean? So I think for me, it's just very much going, as long as you've got love in the room, you're fine, and they are fine.
So it's love, not material things, not materialism. That's brilliant. Thank you. So we're going to get to the part of the show where we go through some letters. And the first letter is from a dad who's devastated because his ex has stopped all access to his children since he met a new partner.
Dear Deirdre, since I found a new partner, my nightmare ex-wife won't let me see my children or agree to a divorce. She was extremely controlling when we were together, and now, even though we've split up, continues to manipulate me. I'm 35 and she's 30. We have two sons aged 8 and 5. We split a year ago. We were on good terms and I saw the boys regularly until I met someone new. Suddenly, she said I couldn't see my boys anymore and that she wouldn't sign the divorce papers. I'm told my sons don't want to see me, but I don't believe that's true. She's just angry and jealous and trying to get back at me. I miss them so much and I'm worried they're going to forget me. How can I better manage this situation?
Sadly, this is a really common scenario that we get letters on, where partners split up and then the relationship breaks down and it's the children who get caught up in the middle. Mm. Alicia, what would your advice be to this dad?
Well, I think, first of all, I'm just really sorry that you're in this situation, because it must be really difficult, incredibly upsetting. And I think before we get into kind of what to do next, just reassuring that actually if you've had a really good relationship with them up until this point, they're never going to forget you. Mm. They might be pulled away from you, but they're not going to forget you. And that's really important. From a legal perspective, she has no right to stop you seeing your children, unless, of course, there's a court order in place. But because they're very young, they can't make their own decisions about seeing you. So it might be that you end up having to go down that route. But really, if you can avoid it, I really would. I'm sure we can all probably imagine the kind of things you'd like to say to her, but they're unlikely to be very helpful. So I think if you're feeling really angry and vengeful and furious, write that all on a piece of paper and then take it outside and set light to it. Don't send it to her.
Yeah.
Because what's going to help in the long term is if you can form some form of connection. The best way to do it really is empathy, kind of putting yourself in her shoes, trying to guess why she's suddenly so rattled. And I guess it's probably because she's perhaps jealous. Maybe she's a bit scared of losing what control over you she still thinks she has. Perhaps she's frightened that you're going to stop supporting her and the boys now that you've got a new partner. You know, we don't really know what's going on for her, but I think the chances are she's probably lashing out because she's feeling threatened in some way. It would be very easy for you both to get entrenched in that battle for access. And I guess we just have to remember, we don't have any control over how she behaves or what she does. The only person that we can change is what we're doing. And sometimes when we change what we're doing, that opens a door for somebody else to move. So, you know, reminding yourself that she's angry and upset because perhaps she's scared might help you to stay a bit calmer. If you're on speaking terms, then I think saying something like, you know, I guess you're upset that I've got a new partner. I wonder if you're worried that I'm not going to be as available. So, you know, trying to use your empathy to create an opportunity. If you get it wrong, don't worry, she'll tell you. But if you get it right, then you'll get that connection. And you have to have connection with all human beings. You need connection before you can correct something. Mm-hmm. I sometimes think with parents in this situation, it's about thinking of your children as if you're business partners, they're the most precious assets of the business. And, you know, you're going to have to work together going forwards, whether you really like it or not, because that's the way parenting goes. So how can we do it is in a kind of adult business way. And if you can't communicate verbally, it might be that you have to resort to emailing one another so that you don't have to have direct communication.
Thank you so much. That was just so comprehensive and clearly explained. Aston, how about you? What did you think about when you heard that first letter?
The most important thing here is your children. That is your most important thing here. It's great to know that you're seeking happiness for yourself, i.e. within relationships, you found a new partner, and that's great. But the children being used as a weapon is always something that gets me, because I know if it was me in that position, it would hurt to a whole different level. I would just say, yeah, as you said, it's very much trying to build that connection again with your ex-partner in a whole different way. You're both technically business partners with your most beautiful and precious asset, which are your children. So you have to work as a team to now basically make the nicest human beings possible that are looking up to you two. And then you two are going to be them, you know, hopefully bringing in two other people into their lives within step-parents and whatever that may be. So, you know, the actions that I would say that you can bring forth and show is definitely empathy and kindness. If it isn't going that way, and of course, if you have to go the legal routes, I would just say, as long as you do everything you can to see your children within time will know that, will eventually, I'm not saying forgive you, but love you for it. I just would say, as hard as it is, I would just never give up. Even if it is just writing letters to them every day, even if you can't get through, just writing letters and storing letters. And then one day, you know, if it's a week, another month, if it's a year, if it's a few years, whenever you get contact again, you've at least got this proof to say, listen, I was here, I love you, I've loved you always. And this is, you know, the proof of that.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
But also, if you're on the other side of that, if you're the parent that's trying to prevent your child having contact with their other parent, just remembering that at some point they become adults.
Yeah.
And at that point, you might find that your actions turn very badly against you, particularly where you've got another parent who's really putting in that much effort. So it's a real no-win situation, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, in the long term in particular. Yeah. Thank you both. Coming up next, we have a young mother who's finding it hard to juggle two kids under three. Plus, we hear from a dad who's worried about his son who's receiving racist messages from his peers. It's time now to take a look at our next listener letter, which comes from a woman who is at her wit's end with looking after her misbehaving kids.
Dear Deirdre, I feel like I'm failing as a mother because I'm constantly stressed and shouting at my kids. The mornings are like a battlefield, and I'm almost always losing my cool. I wake up exhausted and can't handle them when they refuse to do anything that I ask. Even the most simple requests, like sit down for breakfast please, get ignored multiple times. Yesterday ended up with all of us crying when the eldest refused to get dressed, brush her teeth, or even eat her breakfast. The youngest was throwing his breakfast all over the floor and smearing it everywhere. I'm a mum of two babies under three, and at times I find it so hard to cope. If they're not crying or having a tantrum, they're encouraging each other to misbehave. One will be three next month, and the other is 18 months. I'm 34 and my husband's 36. He's a delivery driver and mostly works the night shift. This means that he's often sleeping during the day, leaving me on my own with the kids. It's tough trying to keep them both under control at home, so I rarely do anything fun with them. Everyone says that when you have children, you make lots of your own friends, but I feel lonelier than ever. We were due to go to a local petting farm with one of my friends, but I cancelled at the last minute, as I don't think that I can deal with another public meltdown. I worry I'm not the mum that I thought I would be. Please help.
I mean, that, yeah, personally, I think we've all been there with the meltdowns and that, I would say, parental low of I'm failing as a parent just because the only thing I can kind of relate it to was, for me at that stage, was, you know, my kids were very young, again, the same, been two under three, and my youngest had just wasn't really taking the bottle, and my partner needed a sort of break, so she went for a night out, and then the other one wasn't sleeping, and it was that kind of thing, bedtime, and it was this whole palaver, and then that ended up with two screaming kids on the stairs while I'm trying to feed them both. And it's just, you know, yeah, you do kind of have them breakdown moments, but at the same time, for me, it was a bit like, do you know what, as soon as I kind of changed my perspective and kind of went, do you know what, kids are going to spill stuff, they are going to cry, they're going to do things that we don't want them to do because we want our house to look nice, the house is going to be a mess. And I've just kind of embraced these little things that built up to bigger stressful moments, you know, picking up the cereal and whatever else from the kitchen floor is going to cost me time because I need to make sure I've got this ready and do this and I've got a list of things to do. But do you know what? I just think as long as they're healthy and we keep happy, that's the main thing. Yeah, it's fine, you've spilt something. Do you know what? It's good. This is my issue. I'm tired. I need to kind of not blow at them and go off at them because they are kids and they're going to do it. So I really feel for this reader because it's, yeah, I'm sure Alyssa can probably give you better advice than I can as a parenting expert. But for me, I just had to let go of a lot of my own simple stresses, really, because it just wasn't worth stressing over the little things through the day because they would then end up, you know, adding up to tears in the evening because it got so stressful. So
yeah, I think that's so brilliant to hear you say, yeah, we all feel like we fail at times as parents, and actually don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, and it doesn't come easy at all. Like, I'm not saying it comes overnight, but I think it's just that thing of going, do you know what? Now I've had enough of all the crying. I'm not letting it get to me in the way that it did. Like, the kids are going to cry. That's fine. What would you like? What do you need? How can I help? If I can't help, then let's have a cuddle. Okay, we'll get over it. It'll be fine. 5 minutes, we're good. Like, had to not, as you've perfectly said, like, sweat the small stuff, because it does then eventually build into this mountain that at 6, 7 o'clock at night, you're just emotionally exhausted. physically exhausted, and you're like, no, I can't keep doing this every
day.
Can't
keep battling.
Yeah.
I think that simple line of let's just have a cuddle, it's letting your child know that you're with them and you appreciate what they're feeling, and you're not going to try and tell them off for what they're feeling. That, yes, you know, it's okay to feel grumpy and frustrated, and I'm going to give you a cuddle. Alicia, what would you say to this mum? She's really beating herself up, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. I mean, it's such a horrid situation, isn't it? And I think feeling guilty is kind of comes with parenting, sadly. But because, and that's just because we all want the best.
Yes.
For our kids, isn't it? But I think she's amazing because actually she's had the courage to admit that she's really not coping.
Yeah.
And she's definitely, definitely not alone. And I think that feeling alone is seems to be quite a big part of this as well. Mm. And I suppose it might seem that everybody else is doing lots of kind of social stuff and they've got it all sorted and their kids don't have meltdowns left, right and centre. But, you know, nobody with children that age, I mean, they're tiny, 3 and 18 months, they're tiny. Nobody is going to be finding it easy. It's just that you just don't see their wheels falling off. So I think first of all, being kind to yourself. I absolutely agree with Aston. Don't sweat the small stuff. I always remember my mum saying, it's one of her better pieces of advice, actually, what you put in now is what you get out later. So if you if your goal for parenting is that you want to have the relationship with them throughout their lives, which is generally a good idea because if nothing else, they tend to choose your care home when you get older.
There's the truth.
If you want that long-term relationship, that's built on connection and memories, isn't it? There's one of the workshops I sometimes do, and I always said, nobody ever had written on their grave, she kept a tidy house.
Can you just send me that soundbite so I can send that to Sarah, please? Because that is, I need that, just so you know.
Absolutely. 100% is yours. You can have it. But it is true, isn't it? But having said that, I really, really also get that, you know, if you're somebody who kind of wants to feel a little bit as if you're in control and you can do this, it's not good for your self-esteem and your self-confidence if there's constantly ending up in kind of meltdowns. So I guess it's really thinking about what are the things that might make a real difference to her right now. And I think first of all is that just try really hard not to beat yourself up. You know, this is, it's the toughest job you're going to get. And particularly if you don't really have a lot of backup from your husband because of his job. With the little ones, it always seems to be either morning mayhem or kind of bath time chaos, you know, bedtime chaos. Those are the two points in the day because, you know, by bath time, everybody's tired and kind of over it. But morning mayhem is really, really common. So I thought it might be helpful for you just to have a few ideas that other people have used that might be helpful. So one of them is just try to get as organised as possible the night before. So even to the extent of putting out the clothes that they're going to wear in the morning. And I always remember one of mine never ever wanted to wear, she never wanted to wear clothes really, full stop, if we're honest about it, but she hated winter clothes, and we, she used to call it height tassel, which was basically tight tassel, they get your tights to get in a muddle. So she'd always go for the summer clothes, and eventually I thought, why are you doing this to yourself, Alicia? Just put the summer clothes away in the attic, and then there isn't a choice. So limit the amount of choices that are available. If you can get yourself kind of up and ready before they wake up, it's just easier because you're not trying to get your stuff done at the same time. And then I think, you know, I'm not a massive routine person, but I do think when they're that age, it's really helpful for you and for them because life becomes more predictable. So you can get them to help you, especially the 3-year-old, sort of, you know, when we wake up, what do we need to do first? And then you draw out the little pictures of getting dressed and sitting at the table and eating breakfast and brushing your teeth, all of that kind of stuff. And let them kind of tick every time they get it right, or you know, have a little star chart. I think often as parents, if you're anything like me, you're not probably quite reliable enough with the stars on the star chart, we forget to put them on and then we don't motivate them. But actually the best motivation for little people is our us noticing them get something right.
Yeah.
And the other thing she says is, you know, it doesn't matter how many times I repeat it. You know, repeating things to children doesn't really work. If they're anything like mine, they know you've got at least another 3 octaves to go before they actually have to move. So instead, just kind of try asking rather than telling. So what do you think we need to be doing next? Or just use one word you know, sit and don't say anything else, or trying to kind of get their attention before you give an instruction, because, you know, their agenda of building a Lego block is just as important to them as yours is to you. So if we can kind of get that connection before we give the instruction, they're more likely to move in the right direction. I think lastly really is being realistic. So just try to be as realistic with your expectations. And with little people like that, I think sort of that idea of, it's a bit like puppy training. What do they need? Lots of love, lots of attention, lots of exercise, lots of food and lots of sleep.
Yeah.
And the rest of it, if you can just kind of lots and lots of love, you'll come through the other end.
Yeah, the common denominator, mm-hmm. love. Yeah. And a bit of time, so you're not rushing them, yes. and barking.
Yeah. Yeah. Because also you have to remember, children take much longer to transition from one activity to the next than
yeah.
we do.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to rush them all the time, it's an unrealistic expectation on your part. So
yeah.
we used to have a rule that you could be 20 minutes late for every baby you had, which is great until you get to, you know, a friend of mine who's got six and then she's never turned up for anything.
She's
at all,
turning up on the wrong day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's a nice way of thinking about it, that actually that calmness is more important than being on time. Or...
yeah, that actually, again, what matters, whether you're 10 minutes late. I'm going to move on to our last letter. It's really quite a sad one. It's from a father who's really worried about his son, who's on the receiving end of some particularly nasty bullying.
Dear Deidre, when I saw the nasty racist messages my son had received, I was horrified. They are scum who call him the N-word and tell him to kill himself. We've reported them to the police. I'm a 46-year-old married dad with two mixed-race children. My son is only 12. How can someone send such disgusting and sick messages to a child? My son doesn't know who has been sending them, but the police believe it's another kid who lives locally and has been in trouble before. He comes from a very bad family who don't control him and who have the same racist views. I'm worried that my son will run into this boy and that things could get worse, even violent. My son used to be outgoing and sociable, but I've noticed the marked change in him. He only ever wants to play on his Xbox in the holidays now and makes excuses not to go out and meet his friends like he used to. He says he feels panicky when he's walking home on his own. My desire to protect my son is making me consider moving my family away. What should I do?
It's just really, really awful. There's the bullying and the racism. Aston, what's your initial reaction to this father's letter?
Oh, I'm boiling.
Yeah.
Absolutely bubbling with rage. First things first, I think I applaud your patience.
I can tell this really...
I think this is one thing for me. I spoke to my parents about it before. We had a couple of issues with trolls online writing things under an account that we had for our son with stuff, and I just absolutely lost it. You know, I'm the first person, I think, in this instance to see red and absolutely fly off the handle. So the fact this man is so patient and he is clearly, you know, thinking about the bigger picture and not just obviously that moment in time is a great thing for one, because he's thinking about his child first and foremost. So that is the amazing thing, that you're thinking about your child and not, you know, your own views towards those words and how they're used towards your child. To me as a parent, I have to, no matter who this person's family may be or whatever, you know, it is, I have to confront that person's guardian, parent. If the proof is there and he knows that it is this person, I have to confront that person and I have to find out, because I can't have my child living in fear because of words that are being thrown at him online like that. It's something that, you know, I've sat there and my dad's told me stories of, you know, walking through places at night and just being uncomfortable and just getting in trouble. And the same thing when I was growing up, it's happened, and especially as, you know, a young guy being mixed race and growing up, it was never easy, but at the same time it was a bit like you had to kind of build that thick skin.
That's so, really, you know, sad that you had to build thick skin to deal with it.
Yeah, but I think that was just, I think at the time, like, I'm 34, so at that time, again, it wasn't as vocal within the social communities and social media and out there and spoken about. I think it's that kind of thing of, you know, we're still dealing with kick racism out of football and and people kind of on this whole wave of, is there racism here? And it's a bit like, guys, like, it's nice that we're having this conversation and we're getting to places and whatever, but there's still so much the blindness and ignorance towards it.
I mean, what you just said, your dad dealt with it, you've dealt with it, and now your young son has had racism as well. I mean, that just shows those generations, it's still obviously continuing.
Exactly. I think, you know, it is that thing as, I think as the reader said, he must be in his 40s or so. So again, he would have definitely more than likely experienced it maybe growing up or even on a, you know, somewhat of an adult basis. But for your child, yeah, I think it's so difficult because for me, I have to confront it. I have to confront that thing and show my child, firstly, that you can't be scared of these kind of people that have these disgusting views that don't see, you know, past a shade of skin color. It's we bleed the same color. That's it, just is what it is. We are all the same. So at the end of the day, it's very much that point of going, no,
you're certainly not going to go into hiding or change your life, are you? You're going to continue exactly the way you are because you have a right to. And why 100%. Should you change your life? Yeah. And that is admirable.
You know, listen, I get this day and age, you know, as parents, you just want your kids to be safe and be careful, especially out there. The world isn't, you know, the safest of obviously places. So, you know, you do as a parent, you always think the worst. But I'm, as a parent, going to stand in the front line and make sure that I'm there to deflect anything that I can.
Yeah, you're not in the back seats there, are you, Aston? You're right there and going to stand up for them. Yeah.
Definitely, and show them that it's, you know, this isn't okay and this is not how, you know, people live. No, we're not living like this. Absolutely not.
And I think one thing that I really pick up from this letter, I'm not sure about you, Alicia, is really feels like this boy is starting to live with anxiety, real anxiety.
Yeah.
What would you be saying to the dad so that he can help his son to move forward in his life and not feel he has to hide away because it seems like he's hiding, playing Xbox, not wanting to go out with friends?
Yeah, I mean, it's just horrendous, isn't it? And absolutely, there is no excuse ever for racism and bullying. So I'm really glad that he's reported the situation to the police, even if it doesn't sound as though perhaps it's changed much at the moment. And I don't blame him for considering moving, and you would do whatever you can, as Aston says, isn't it? But I think perhaps one of the things we need to do with young people who are bullied is be very careful that we don't take away more of their power. Because I think the thing about bullying is it is all about power, isn't it? Mm. So if you've been bullied, what we don't want then is to kind of rectify it by doing things that are beyond their control. So talking to him, explaining that actually he has a right to feel safe, lots of empathy around how he's feeling. It's not surprising. I would feel frightened. Most of us would feel frightened.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel frightened, but actually this kid's taken away your power. And he's making you live a smaller life, a smaller version of your life. I think that you are brave enough to be able to take your power back. So then kind of exploring with him. So he's allowed to feel how he's feeling, but then how can we help you to take your power back? And that's building up that self-esteem to really believe you should be treated better than that. It's about making sure he's got really good social skills so that he can talk back when people say things or walk away if that's the right thing to do in that moment. It's about checking that, you know, perhaps he's got some basic self-defense, but more about how to avoid trouble because you don't want to get into that confrontation. And actually all the best self-defense experts will say how to read a situation, how to avoid trouble is better. Yeah. But also exploring how he can meet up with his friends in a safe way that's going to build his confidence back up again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, don't let somebody else take your power away.
Yeah. someone so narrow-minded and bigoted. Don't let them rule your life. I love that advice about actually involve the child in the solution. And
I really, really take my hat off to him for managing to stay as calm
as he
has, because I'd want to be out there committing.
Yes.
Goodness knows what.
And actually,
that's not helpful for your child either, because what you're showing them is, I'm scared for you too.
Mm.
And that's not going to build his confidence, is
it? As a last question, I wanted to ask you both, what would be your single piece of advice to any parent who is struggling and beating themselves up about being a failure and not being the parent that they should be? Aston, over to you.
Every single parent ever there's ever been has felt like they're failing as a parent at some point. I've never met anybody, heard anybody talk about, I think Alicia said it earlier, the perfect parent. That doesn't exist. I think obviously as a parent, you just need to probably understand and come to, you know, the acknowledgement of it's a child. The child's learning every single day from you. It's a bit like you have to kind of project what you want back, I suppose. How you have to show them all the empathy, all the kindness, all the love, all the laughter, the jokes, everything that you want your child to be. Like, we're molding these little people. So, you know, all the little stresses, as I said earlier, I don't think there's anything to kind of really be stressed at. If we're lucky enough to be able to have these little people in our lives and have families, I think we just have to sometimes take a breath. You have to count to 10, whatever it may be, and just realize, you know what, it could be probably so much worse right now. Keep going, you'll be fine. You will be so fine. Like, I've been there with the kids on the stairs absolutely screaming at me, tears in my eyes, going, I can't do this on my own, this is mad. Like, she needs to come home, but it's fine.
You got through it.
Yeah.
And everyone went to sleep eventually.
Yeah. And then now 4 and 2, and we have the best time because we passed that early baby stage. And then there's this stage, and there's this, like, it doesn't last forever. Nothing lasts forever. This sleep deprivation doesn't last forever. It's all a moment in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a learning curve for them and for us. It's just, Alicia said again earlier, there's no manual, there's no book. Your child's different to mine, mine's different to yours, and his and hers, and whatever. So it's, yeah, you just have to just treasure every moment as wild and as loud as they can be. So, just treasure the moments, because they don't last.
Thank you. That was perfect. And Alicia, how about yourself? What would you say to support someone who's beating themselves up?
I think Aston said most of it, really. Yeah. I'm not sure I can do any better than that. I think it's, if you had to sum it up in... Be kind to yourself, be kind to them. Kindness can carry us through most things.
Yeah, I love that. And it does start with the way you talk to yourself, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
You wouldn't say that to your child. You're a rubbish child. You're failing at this child thing.
Yes.
Exactly.
You really wouldn't, would you?
Yeah.
No, be kind to yourself, be kind to them, and just keep thinking, what really matters here? And it is the relationship. And if you focus on that, you're never going to go that far wrong.
Yeah. Thank you so much to both of you. Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
It's lovely to be with you both.
Thanks so much to you for listening, and to Alicia Drummond and Aston Merigold for being such great company and sharing their words of advice on parenting. We've covered the tricky balance of spending time with your children after a hostile split with a partner, how to manage badly behaved tots, and equipped you with the tools to put a stop to bullies upsetting your child. If you're struggling with a problem and feel like you need some advice, the Dear Deirdre team is here to help. Just send your problems to deirdeirdre@the-sun.co.uk. And remember, you can read Dear Deirdre every day at thesun.co.uk/dear-deirdre or by picking up a copy of The Sun. Our advice page is packed full of support and extra resources, which can help you with your own challenges. Before you go, don't forget to click follow so you never miss an episode. And if you have a spare moment, maybe you could give us a rating and leave us a review. This boost of appreciation all helps so that other people who are seeking advice can find us on their podcast app. I'll be back next week for another episode of Answering Your Dilemmas. But for now, I'm Sally Land, and this has been Dear Deirdre.